All right, so get this, you guys, for this deep dive, we're going into some pretty out there territory.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You've sent us these two YouTube videos,
Right.
and let me tell you, this Trey Smith, the guy who makes them, he's blending like modern conspiracy theories with biblical prophecy,
Okay.
with ancient history,
Wow.
even quantum physics.
That's quite a mix.
It is. It's a fascinating mix, and we're going to see what kind of insights, what kind of connections we can uncover here.
It's certainly an ambitious undertaking to try to
Yes.
connect all these things.
Yeah, so the first video, this Kim Clement letter you want to hear,
Okay.
it focuses on these prophecies that this Kim Clement delivered back in 2006.
Okay.
And he talks about these political figures, you know, Trump, Biden, Hillary Clinton,
Right.
Lindsey Graham. Even
Wow.
he predicts things like a cold, dark winter and a spiritual awakening that's going to sweep across America.
So some pretty dramatic
Very
stuff.
dramatic stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
And the video really emphasizes that Clement predicted Billy Graham's death
Right.
and the subsequent rise of two new spiritual leaders. So
Okay.
the interesting thing here is that Billy Graham died a couple of years before this video was made.
Oh, wow.
So it's clearly meant to like bolster Clement's credibility as a prophet in
Right.
the eyes of his followers.
Yeah, it definitely adds this layer of like he knew it all along,
Right,
you know? But it
exactly.
makes you think about the role of prophetic figures throughout history, not just in like a biblical context,
Right.
right? They show up in so many cultures and belief
They
systems.
do, yeah. It is fascinating how
Wow.
these prophecies can shape people's perceptions and actions. You know, it speaks to the power of belief
Yeah.
and the human need to find meaning in
Totally.
events, even if those events seem random or chaotic.
Yeah, totally. And it makes you wonder, though, like, how do we interpret these prophecies?
Right.
Especially when they're often so ambiguous, you know? How do we separate genuine foresight from coincidences
Right.
or even like deliberate manipulation?
Yeah. Those are excellent questions,
Yeah.
and they're particularly relevant when prophecies are tied to political or social agendas. You
Yeah.
know, it's crucial to approach these claims with a critical eye and consider the potential biases at play.
Okay, so let's move on to the second video, this theory of everything. God, devils, dimensions, dragons, illusion, and reality. The theory of everything.
Wow.
Even the title's a mouthful, right?
Yeah, it's quite a title.
I know.
He's not holding back.
No, he's going for it all.
He's going for the grand unified theory of everything,
That's it.
it seems.
He is.
Yeah, and one of the core arguments he makes is this idea of intelligent design.
Okay.
He points to the complexity of life, the fine-tuning of the universe's physical constants, and the very nature of consciousness itself as evidence against random chance being the sole driving force.
Yeah, and he does not hold back.
No.
You know, like he talks about how ridiculously improbable it would be for a single cell
Right.
to form just by pure chance. It's like imagine a tornado sweeping through a junkyard
Right.
and somehow assembling a perfectly functioning Boeing 747.
It's a very vivid image.
Right. That's the kind of odds he's throwing around here.
It is. He uses that analogy to really illustrate just how complex even the simplest forms of life are.
Yeah.
And it's true. The inner workings of a cell are mind-boggling.
It's like a microscopic city,
It is, yeah.
bustling with activity
Oh,
and
wow.
intricate
And
processes
we're only beginning to
that
understand.
we're, yeah, barely scratching the surface of. Yeah. It's
Exactly.
kind of awe-inspiring when you think about it that
It
way.
is.
But then he goes on to say that ancient dragons might have actually been dinosaurs
Okay.
living alongside humans.
All right.
And he uses the discovery of soft tissue in dinosaur fossils to back this up,
Interesting.
suggesting that, you know, the conventional timeline of millions of years might be wrong. I gotta admit, that part had me raising an eyebrow.
Yeah, it's definitely a bold claim.
Yeah.
And while the discovery of soft tissue in dinosaur fossils is fascinating,
Yeah.
it doesn't necessarily overturn our current understanding of evolution and the vastness of the geologic timescale.
Okay.
There are plausible explanations for how soft tissue can be preserved for millions of years.
Okay.
And techniques like carbon dating are incredibly reliable for determining the age of fossils.
So it's important to separate the wow factor
Right.
from the actual scientific evidence.
Exactly.
But, you know, even if we don't take everything literally, it's still fun to think about how ancient myths and legends might have been shaped by encounters with real creatures,
Right.
even if those creatures weren't quite the fire-breathing dragons of myth.
It's a fascinating thought experiment,
It is.
and it speaks to the enduring power of storytelling. and the human desire to make sense of the world around us, even the parts that seem mysterious or inexplicable.
Right. And speaking of mysterious and inexplicable, let's get into Smith's exploration of quantum physics and consciousness.
Okay.
This is where he really dives into the deep end, like suggesting that reality isn't as solid and fixed as we perceive it to be. He seems captivated by this idea that, like, we're living in a matrix-like world where consciousness plays a key role.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He certainly does. And he touches on some truly mind-bending concepts from quantum physics.
Okay.
Like superposition and entanglement.
All right. You lost me a bit there.
Okay.
Can you break that down for us non-physicists?
Sure, sure.
Like, what does any of that actually mean? And how does it tie into consciousness?
Well, so imagine flipping a coin.
Okay.
Before it lands, it's both heads and tails at the same time, right? That's kind of like superposition.
Okay.
Now imagine two coins that are linked so that if one lands on heads, the other automatically lands on tails, even if they're miles apart.
Right.
That's entanglement. So Smith uses these concepts to suggest that consciousness itself might be the ultimate observer that collapses these possibilities into the reality we experience.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
Now that is seriously trippy.
It is.
So he's basically saying that, like, our thoughts might actually influence the fabric of reality at a fundamental level.
He seems to be suggesting that, yes.
Wow.
And it's an idea that's been explored by some physicists and philosophers, though it's still highly debated.
Yeah, I can see why. It definitely challenges our everyday intuitions about how the world works.
Right.
It's enough to make you wonder if we're all living in a giant simulation.
That's a question that has puzzled philosophers and scientists for centuries.
Yeah.
And it's a question that Smith doesn't shy away from.
It seems not.
He even uses the analogy of the human body as a temple housing a ghost to illustrate this idea that our true selves, our consciousness, might be distinct from our physical bodies.
Okay, we're officially in the realm of the metaphysical now.
Well, we are.
But I have to admit, it's kind of fascinating to think about.
It is.
It definitely raises questions about the nature of reality, the self, and the possibility that there's, you know, much more to the universe than meets the eye.
It does. And it's the sense of wonder and mystery that Smith seems to be tapping into.
Yeah.
You know, he's encouraging us to step outside of our conventional ways of thinking and to consider that there might be much more to reality than we've been led to believe.
It's like he's saying, like, hey, don't take anything for granted. Question everything.
Right.
And that's a pretty cool invitation.
Yeah.
Even if some of his claims are, you know, a bit out there.
I agree. It's about cultivating a sense of curiosity and open-mindedness.
Right.
Even when encountering ideas that challenge our existing beliefs.
So what's fascinating here is that he ties this whole exploration of consciousness and reality into the idea of spiritual warfare.
Okay.
He talks about the battle between good and evil, demonic forces, and the importance of faith and prayer as weapons against these forces.
It's interesting how this theme of spiritual warfare runs through both videos.
Yeah.
He seems to be suggesting that there's a cosmic struggle playing out.
Yeah.
A battle for our very souls.
And he doesn't hold back on the imagery.
No.
Like, he talks about demonic entities, about ancient battles between good and evil,
right,
and about the need to arm ourselves with spiritual weapons.
It's a narrative that has resonated with people for centuries.
Yeah.
You know, it speaks to our deepest fears and anxiety.
Totally.
But also to our yearning for meaning and purpose.
Yeah, but he also seems to be playing on those anxieties, especially when he talks about the, like, global reset.
Right.
And the supposed efforts of, you know, these powerful elites to control the world.
It's a common theme in conspiracy theories, and it can be pretty unsettling, especially for those who already feel powerless or marginalized.
Yeah, totally. So it's important to recognize that these fears often stem from legitimate concerns about social injustice, economic inequality,
absolutely,
and the erosion of individual liberties.
Yeah. However,
yeah,
it's also crucial to distinguish between genuine systemic issues and narratives that scapegoat or demonize entire groups or institutions.
Right. It's about finding that balance between acknowledging valid concerns and avoiding harmful stereotypes or conspiratorial thinking.
Precisely.
Right.
It's about discerning between genuine insights and narratives that are driven by fear or prejudice.
And that's a skill we all need to cultivate.
It is.
In this age of information overload.
Absolutely.
You know, it's about being critical thinkers.
Yeah.
About questioning the information we're bombarded with and about seeking out diverse perspectives.
I couldn't agree more. And that perhaps is one of the most valuable takeaways from Smith's videos.
Yeah.
Even if we don't necessarily buy into all of his claims,
right.
You know, he's prompting us to think for ourselves, to question what we believe,
right.
And to be open to the possibility that there's much more to the universe than we currently understand.
Okay, I think we've unpacked quite a bit already.
Yeah.
We've explored prophecies, dabbled in quantum physics, and even touched on the idea of spiritual warfare.
It's been a wild ride so far.
It's been a wild ride so far, and we're just getting started.
Where?
So before we dive deeper
into
Smith's exploration of ancient history and the biblical flood narrative.
All right.
I want to turn it over to you.
Okay.
What stands out to you so far? What questions are bubbling up in your mind?
So, welcome back to our deep dive into Trey Smith and his really unique blend of like history, prophecy, and the nature of reality.
Yeah, last time we kind of left off with Smith suggesting that dinosaurs and humans might have coexisted,
right.
Using the discovery of soft tissue in dinosaur fossils as part of his argument.
Exactly.
And that kind of led him to a discussion of Noah's Ark,
okay.
The flood narrative, and how he sees those fitting into, you know, our understanding of the world.
So it's really fascinating how he tries to like create this whole alternative history,
yeah,
weaving together these scientific findings with like biblical interpretations.
Yeah, he even uses those fossilized seashells that you find on mountaintops,
right,
as evidence for a global flood that completely reshaped the planet.
Yeah, it's a really interesting example of how he blends those two perspectives together.
Yeah.
What's fascinating is that he doesn't just dismiss the scientific evidence.
Yeah.
He tries to incorporate it into his narrative.
Right.
He points to like the intricate layering of fossils as evidence that the flood was a rapid catastrophic event.
Okay.
Rather than a slow, gradual process like, you know, scientists generally describe.
Okay, and he gets pretty specific about the arc itself.
He does.
Like, you know, crunching the numbers to show how it could have theoretically held all the necessary animals.
Right.
He throws out a number like 8,000 genera, which are like family groups of animals.
Okay.
And then just for good measure, bumps it up to 30,000.
Wow.
So like, just to be sure.
Yeah. Yeah, just to cover all the bases.
Yes, like, see, it totally could have worked.
Right, exactly. There's a definite sense that he's trying to like debunk the skeptics,
yeah.
You know. He also highlights the ark's design, emphasizing its stability and how it could have withstood even the most extreme conditions.
Okay.
So, you know, he wants to show that the story, as it's told in the Bible,
yeah.
Isn't as far-fetched as some people might think.
And then he brings up all these flood myths from ancient cultures around the world.
Right.
The Epic of Gilgamesh,
yeah.
The Sumerian King List, even stories from China and Egypt. It's like he's saying, look, everyone remembers this event, so it must have happened.
Right. That's a common strategy when trying to validate a particular narrative.
Yeah.
However, while these flood myths are undeniably widespread,
yeah.
It's important to remember the difference between myth and historical fact.
Okay.
You know, these stories could reflect common human experiences with floods and natural disasters,
right.
Which have always been a part of our history. But that doesn't automatically prove the existence of a single global flood,
right.
As described in the Bible.
Okay, so we need to be careful about taking those stories as like literal historical accounts.
Exactly.
But it is intriguing to consider how ancient cultures tried to grapple with the power of nature.
Right.
And the idea of a catastrophic event that could reshape the world.
It speaks to something very deep within us.
Yeah.
This kind of fear of the unknown and the fragility of our existence.
So Smith then kind of jumps into a discussion of Darwinian evolution.
Okay.
And spends like a good chunk of the video highlighting what he sees as flaws and inconsistencies in the theory.
Okay.
He really seems to be pushing this idea of intelligent design,
right.
As a more plausible explanation for like the complexity and diversity of life on Earth.
He brings up the concept of irreducible complexity,
okay.
Which basically argues that certain biological systems are so intricate,
mm-hmm.
They couldn't have possibly evolved gradually.
Okay.
You know, he points to the human eye as an example, arguing that it couldn't function without all of its parts working together perfectly from the get-go.
Right.
This, he suggests, points to the need for a designer.
Yay.
An intelligence behind the creation of these systems.
He also brings up the supposed lack of transitional fossils. in the fossil record.
Okay.
You know, those missing links that would show one species gradually transforming into another.
Right.
He uses this to cast doubt on the whole idea of one species evolving into another over time.
Well, it's important to remember that scientific understanding is constantly evolving.
Right.
And while there are areas of ongoing debate within evolutionary biology, the overwhelming consensus among scientists is that evolution is the best explanation we have for the diversity of life on Earth.
Okay.
Mechanisms like natural selection, mutation, and genetic drift, acting over vast stretches of time, have shaped the incredible array of life we see today.
So it's a matter of recognizing that science is a process, not a set of fixed conclusions.
Right, exactly.
But even if we accept the basic principles of evolution, Smith still raises some thought-provoking questions.
He does.
Like, what are the limits of evolution? Can small, gradual changes really account for the complexity of something like the human brain or the intricate dance of ecosystems?
Those are questions that scientists continue to explore.
Right.
And Smith seems to be suggesting that evolution, while it may explain some changes within species, can't account for the leaps in complexity that we see throughout the history of life.
Okay.
He sees those leaps as evidence of an intelligent force guiding the process.
And to kind of illustrate his point, Smith talks about these experiments in Russia where scientists have been selectively breeding silver foxes for over 50 years.
Wow. Okay.
And they've been choosing foxes that are naturally more tame and docile. And over generations, they've observed changes not just in behavior, but also in physical characteristics like coat color and even ear shape.
So he uses this example to illustrate the concept of microevolution, or changes within a species over time due to variations in gene frequencies.
Okay.
He's essentially saying, look, we can see these small changes happening, but that doesn't mean a fox will ever evolve into something entirely different, like a dog or a cat.
So he's acknowledging that change happens.
Yes.
But he's drawing a line between that kind of microevolution and the macroevolution that would be needed to create entirely new species.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Evolutionary biologists would argue that those small changes can, over vast periods of time and in response to environmental pressures, accumulate and lead to the emergence of new species.
Okay.
But Smith seems to be skeptical of that claim.
And then he brings in this concept of entropy.
Okay.
Which, as I understand it, is basically the idea that things tend to move from order to disorder over time.
Right.
He uses this to argue against evolution, saying that it goes against this fundamental law of nature.
He's referring to the second law of thermodynamics, which states that the total entropy of a closed system can never decrease. Okay. While it's true that in a closed system, things tend to break down over time.
Right.
It's important to remember that Earth is not a closed system.
Okay.
You know, we constantly receive energy from the sun.
Right.
And that energy drives biological processes.
Okay.
Allowing for the creation of order and complexity.
So it's like the sun is providing the fuel for life to defy entropy, at least on a local level.
Precisely. And within that context, evolution can be seen as a process that harnesses energy to create order and complexity from simpler building blocks. So it's not defying the laws of physics, it's working within them in a remarkably efficient way.
But Smith argues that even with the sun's energy, the odds of life forming spontaneously are still unbelievably slim.
Right.
He keeps coming back to this idea that the sheer complexity we see in nature points towards an intelligent designer, a mind behind it all.
And that's an argument that has been debated for centuries. It's the classic argument from design, the idea that the intricate order and complexity of the universe point toward a creator.
Right.
Smith is essentially aligning himself with that perspective, suggesting that scientific explanations, while they may explain the how of things, can't fully address the why.
And that's where faith comes in, right?
It seems so.
He's saying that ultimately we need something beyond science, beyond reason, to explain the mysteries of existence.
He seems to be suggesting that, yes.
Okay.
He repeatedly emphasizes the biblical narrative of creation, suggesting that it offers a more complete understanding of our origins than purely scientific explanations.
Okay.
He's not necessarily rejecting science, but he sees it as incomplete, as needing the framework of faith to make sense of the bigger picture.
Now, Smith spends like a good chunk of the video discussing the biblical flood narrative and connecting it to like the origins of civilization.
Right.
He proposes that Noah and his family, the survivors of the flood, were instrumental in repopulating the earth
okay.
and establishing those first civilizations.
Interesting how he links the biblical narrative to a broader historical context.
Yeah.
You know, he draws on the fact that flood myths are found in cultures all around the world, suggesting that these stories are all rooted in a real global event,
right?
The flood described in the Bible.
Yeah.
He sees these shared narratives as confirmation of the biblical account.
And he even suggests that the ark landed somewhere in the region of the Fertile Crescent.
Okay.
Which is considered, you know, the cradle of civilization.
Right.
He sees this as more than just coincidence, as evidence that the biblical story is intertwined with, like, the emergence of human societies as we know them.
There's a definite sense that he's trying to ground the biblical narrative in historical reality.
Yeah.
He doesn't just want it to be a story. He wants it to be a foundational event that shaped the course of human history.
And he goes on to talk about the supposed advanced knowledge and technology possessed by some ancient civilizations.
Okay.
Suggesting they might have inherited this knowledge from a pre-flood civilization.
Interesting.
He points to structures like the pyramids of Egypt and Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm.
Arguing that their precision and astronomical alignments couldn't have been achieved with the tools and techniques that are usually attributed to those cultures.
Okay.
It's like he's hinting at a lost world, a civilization that was more advanced than we give them credit for.
He even suggests that these civilizations might have had access to some kind of lost technology, perhaps a form of energy that we haven't rediscovered yet.
Yeah.
You know, he connects this to the biblical account of the Tower of Babel,
proposing
that the story might be a symbolic representation of a highly advanced pre-flood civilization that was ultimately destroyed because of its hubris.
That's a pretty dramatic interpretation.
It is.
So he's essentially suggesting that humanity might have already reached a peak of technological advancement in the distant past, only to have it all wiped away by the flood.
It's like a cautionary tale, a warning about the dangers of unchecked ambition and the fragility of human progress.
It's a fascinating narrative, full of intrigue and speculation.
It is.
But it's important to approach these claims with a critical eye.
Absolutely.
While it's true that we're still uncovering the mysteries of ancient civilizations,
mm-hmm.
there's no concrete evidence to support the idea of a globally advanced pre-flood civilization.
Right.
It's important to avoid romanticizing the past.
Yes.
Or imposing our own interpretations on the limited evidence we have.
I agree.
Okay, so it's about balancing that sense of wonder and curiosity with a healthy dose of skepticism.
Exactly. It's about appreciating the mysteries of the past while also recognizing the limitations of our knowledge.
Now, Smith doesn't stop there.
Okay.
He delves into the nature of consciousness, suggesting that our true selves, our consciousness, are not simply products of our physical brains, but rather eternal entities that exist independently of our bodies.
Interesting.
He brings up near-death experiences and other phenomena that suggest the possibility of life after death, further solidifying his argument for the existence of a soul that transcends the physical realm.
So he's essentially tapping into that age-old question, what happens after we die.
Right.
He proposes that our consciousness, our soul, is not bound by the limitations of the physical body and continues to exist in some form after death.
Okay.
You know, he connects this to various spiritual and religious traditions that have explored the concept of an afterlife or reincarnation.
And he doesn't just rely on ancient beliefs.
Right.
He even brings up quantum physics again.
Okay.
Pointing to the observer effect and suggesting that consciousness might actually play a role in shaping reality at a subatomic level.
Interesting.
It's like he's trying to find scientific validation for these spiritual ideas.
Yeah, he's drawing parallels between ancient wisdom and modern science, suggesting that they're not necessarily incompatible.
Okay.
You know, he's trying to create a unified view of reality that encompasses both the material and the spiritual.
Like a bold approach.
It is.
And it definitely challenges our conventional ways of thinking about, like, the relationship between science and spirituality.
Yeah.
But is he overreaching?
Yeah.
Is he blurring the lines between what can be scientifically proven and what is a matter of personal faith?
Those are important questions to consider.
Yeah.
While there's no doubt that science and spirituality can coexist, it's crucial to avoid conflating scientific concepts with religious beliefs.
Oh.
Science deals with the observable and measurable aspects of the natural world,
Right.
whereas spirituality deals with matters of faith, meaning, and purpose.
Hmm.
They can inform and enrich each other,
Yeah.
but it's important to recognize their distinct domains.
Okay, so it's about finding that balance,
It is.
respecting the boundaries between those different ways of knowing.
Exactly.
But, you know, even if we approach Smith's claims with a critical eye,
Yeah.
there's still something compelling about his exploration.
There is.
You know, he's asking those big questions that have puzzled humanity for centuries.
He is.
Who are we?
Right.
What is our place in the universe? What happens after we die?
Absolutely. And while he may not have all the answers,
Right.
he's encouraging us to ask those questions,
Yeah.
to challenge our assumptions,
Mm-hmm.
and to be open to the possibility that reality is far more expansive and mysterious than we might imagine.
And that's a pretty powerful message. It's a message that resonates with something deep within us, that yearning for meaning,
Right.
that desire to understand the mysteries of existence.
Absolutely. And it's a message that transcends any particular religious or scientific framework.
Yeah.
It's a message about the human spirit, our capacity for wonder, and our relentless pursuit of truth.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground in this second part of our deep dive. Mm-hmm. We've explored ancient flood myths, delved into the debates around evolution, and even touched on the nature of consciousness and the possibility of life after death.
It's been a wild ride.
It's been a wild ride, and we're not done yet.
We're not.
There's still much to explore in Smith's fascinating and often challenging exploration of reality.
Absolutely.
So before we dive into the final part of this deep dive,
yeah,
where we'll examine Smith's views on spiritual warfare, the nature of reality, and the future of humanity.
Great.
I want to pause for a moment and ask you, what's resonating with you so far?
Mm-hmm.
What thoughts or questions are swirling around in your mind? Okay, so deep divers, we are back, and we are ready to wrap up our journey through Trey Smith's world.
Okay.
We've explored his ideas about ancient history, evolution, the nature of consciousness.
It's been quite a ride.
Oh, it has been a wild ride. But now we're going to delve into some of his, I think, most intriguing and, let's be honest, sometimes controversial ideas about spiritual warfare, the nature of reality, and what he sees as the future of humanity.
He certainly doesn't shy away from those, like, big, often uncomfortable questions.
Yes, he doesn't.
And he blends, you know, ancient beliefs with modern anxieties in a way that's both fascinating and, as you said, potentially unsettling for some.
It's like he's tapping into this, like, primal fear of the unknown.
Right.
This sense that there are forces at play beyond our comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
And he connects that to this idea of spiritual warfare.
Okay.
This cosmic battle between good and evil that's been raging since, you know, the beginning of time.
He paints a very vivid picture.
He does.
Drawing on imagery from the Bible, ancient mythology, even modern horror movies to illustrate this concept of a spiritual realm where unseen forces are constantly vying for power.
And he's not just talking about some like abstract philosophical concept here.
No.
He presents this idea of spiritual warfare as like a very real and present danger, something that we need to be aware of and actively defend ourselves against.
So he even suggests that many of the problems we see in the world today, you know, like violence, greed, and corruption are the result of demonic influence.
So he's tapping into a belief system that has existed for centuries.
Right.
This idea that evil is not just an abstract concept, but like a real force that can manifest in the world through individuals or even institutions.
It's a belief that can be both comforting and alarming.
Yeah.
Comforting because it provides a framework for understanding suffering and injustice, but alarming because it can lead to fear, intolerance, and the demonization of those who are perceived as different or threatening.
He's definitely walking a fine line there.
He is.
And I have to admit, some of his claims about demonic entities and like the power of evil can be pretty unsettling.
Yeah, it's like he's tapping into our deepest fears and anxieties.
Yeah.
Those primal instincts that make us wary of the darkness.
Mm-hmm. And crave the safety of light.
It's important to remember that these beliefs often stem from a deep human need for meaning and purpose.
Did you?
A desire to make sense of a world that can often seem chaotic and unpredictable.
Absolutely.
And while it's tempting to just dismiss these beliefs as, you know, mere superstition,
right?
It's important to recognize that they can have a profound impact on people's lives,
They
shaping their worldview, their choices,
Right.
and their interactions with others.
It's true.
So how do we navigate this, like, complex landscape of beliefs? How do we engage with these ideas without getting lost in fear or judgment?
I think it starts with recognizing that everyone is on their own unique journey,
Okay.
shaped by their own experiences, beliefs, and values.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's important to challenge harmful ideologies,
Right.
it's also important to approach those who hold different beliefs
Okay.
with empathy and a willingness to understand their perspective.
So it's about finding that balance.
It is.
Between critical thinking and compassion.
Between challenging harmful beliefs and respecting individual journeys.
Exactly. And it's also about recognizing that evil is not just some external force,
okay.
but something that exists within each of us,
mm-hmm.
a potential that we can choose to either embrace or reject.
So we have agency in this spiritual battle.
It seems that way.
It's not just about, like, passively defending ourselves against unseen forces,
right?
But about actively choosing good over evil in our own lives.
He seems to be suggesting that, yes.
Okay.
You know, he talks about the importance of cultivating inner strength, of
mm-hmm.
developing our spiritual awareness,
okay.
and of aligning ourselves with forces of good.
He sees this as an ongoing process.
He does.
A constant struggle to choose love over fear,
mm-hmm.
compassion over judgment,
right.
hope over despair.
It's a lifelong journey.
It is. And he even provides, like, practical tools and techniques for engaging in this spiritual warfare.
Okay.
He talks about the power of prayer,
right.
meditation, mm-hmm. and visualization as ways to, like, strengthen our spiritual defenses and connect with higher realms of consciousness.
He's drawing on a wide range of spiritual traditions.
Yes.
From ancient practices like yoga and meditation mm-hmm. to modern techniques like mindfulness and positive affirmations.
Like, he's just creating a toolkit for spiritual empowerment.
He is.
Offering, like, viewers ways to cultivate their inner strength
right.
and navigate the challenges of life.
He seems to be suggesting that we all have this innate potential for spiritual growth and transformation,
right.
that we're not just victims of circumstance,
right.
but active participants in shaping our own destinies.
Yeah, it's a message of empowerment and hope.
It is.
Even amidst the anxieties and uncertainties of our time.
Absolutely. And he connects that message of empowerment
mm.
to a broader vision of the future.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he sees humanity as standing at a crossroads.
Okay.
A moment of both great peril and great opportunity. He points to the accelerating pace of technological advancements, the rise of artificial intelligence, the potential for genetic engineering,
right.
and the increasing interconnectedness of our world as both signs of progress
yeah.
and harbingers of potential disaster.
It's like he's saying, hey, we're on the verge of either a technological utopia or a dystopian nightmare, and the choice is ours.
He definitely taps into that sense of urgency that many people feel today. This
yeah.
feeling that the world is changing at an unprecedented pace
right.
and that we're not entirely sure where it's all heading.
Yeah, and he connects that sense of urgency to a spiritual dimension.
He does.
Suggesting that this technological revolution is intertwined with a spiritual awakening.
Right.
A shift in consciousness that's happening on a global scale.
He sees it as a time when people are questioning old paradigms.
Yeah.
Searching yeah. for deeper meaning.
Yeah.
Yearning for a more just and sustainable world.
Right. He's not just talking about technological advancements here. He's talking about a fundamental shift in the way we see ourselves and our place in the universe.
And he sees that shift as being driven in part by the very challenges we're facing.
Right.
He suggests that the crises we're grappling with, from climate change to social injustice,
hmm.
are not just problems to be solved, mm-hmm. but opportunities for growth, transformation, mm-hmm. and a deeper understanding of our interconnectedness.
It's a pretty optimistic outlook considering how bleak things can sometimes feel.
It is.
It's like he's saying, hey, we're in this together and we have the potential to create a better world.
Right.
But it's going to take a shift in consciousness,
mm-hmm.
a willingness to embrace new ways of thinking and being.
And he doesn't shy away from the spiritual dimension of that shift.
Right.
He talks about the need to cultivate love, compassion, and forgiveness
okay.
to transcend our ego-driven desires
mm-hmm.
and to recognize our interconnectedness with all of life.
Yeah, so he's essentially calling for a spiritual revolution.
He is.
A shift in values and priorities.
Correct.
That will allow us to navigate the challenges ahead
mm-hmm.
and create a more just and sustainable world.
He seems to be suggesting that this is not just about individual transformation,
okay.
but about a collective awakening, a global shift in consciousness
right.
that will usher in a new era of peace, harmony, and interconnectedness.
He's definitely painting a grand vision.
He is.
And while it may sound utopian to some,
right.
it's important to remember that utopian visions have often been the driving force behind social progress.
Oh, I have.
They provide a sense of hope and direction,
mm-hmm.
a goal to strive for,
right.
even if the path ahead is uncertain.
And he acknowledges that the path ahead will be challenging.
Right.
He talks about the need to overcome fear, greed,
yeah.
and the forces of darkness that seek to keep us divided and disempowered.
Mm-hmm.
But he ultimately sees humanity as capable of rising to the occasion,
right.
of harnessing our collective wisdom and creativity
yeah.
to create a better world for ourselves and future generations.
It's a powerful message of hope and empowerment.
It is.
Even in the face of, like, seemingly insurmountable challenges.
Absolutely. And it's a message that resonates with a deep human yearning
mm-hmm.
for a world where peace, justice, and sustainability prevail.
Well, we've reached the end of our deep dive.
We have.
And I have to say, it's been quite a journey.
It has.
Trey Smith's worldview is complex,
yeah.
challenging, yeah. and definitely not for everyone.
Not for everyone.
But he's forced us to grapple with some big questions.
Yes.
About history, science, spirituality, and the future of humanity.
He's challenged our assumptions,
mm-hmm.
expanded our perspectives,
yeah.
and invited us to consider possibilities that we might not have otherwise entertained.
Right.
And that, I think, is the true value of exploring these unconventional ideas.
It is.
They force us to think critically, to question what we believe,
right.
and to be open to the possibility that there's much more to the universe than we currently understand.
So where do we go from here?
Right.
What do we take away from this deep dive?
That's a question for each of you listening to ponder.
Yeah.
What resonated with you?
Right.
What challenged your beliefs?
Yeah.
What new questions emerged?
Yeah.
The journey of exploration doesn't end here.
It doesn't.
It's an ongoing process of discovery, questioning, and integration.
Trey Smith has offered us one perspective.
Right.
One way of making sense of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's up to each of us to find our own truth.
It is.
To weave together our own tapestry of beliefs and experiences.
So keep exploring, keep questioning,
yeah.
and keep an open mind.
I love that.
The world is full of wonder and mystery.
It is.
And the more we learn, the more we realize how much there is still to discover.
Beautifully said.
Thank you.
And that wraps up our deep dive into the world of Trey Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time. Keep those minds open and keep exploring those big questions.